Okay, who came up with that title? You or me, Chris? So basically, what we're going to do is tell a story. Last year, during the influenza season in the United States, there were 68 pediatric deaths. Six of those, or nearly 10% of them, died in Minnesota in about a 3.5 week time. And so we had very little time to coordinate the response to the community demand. And I couldn't stand up here and present it alone without acknowledging that that effort was a tremendous public-private partnership. So Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Department of Health and I are going to co-present this to you today. So here comes the story. So you remember last flu season, it was relatively quiet for quite some time after the holidays, and then there was a pretty dramatic spike in influenza cases, and this was the red line that you can see. First, second, third week of January, things really got busy with cases. And this is the week of February 7th, these epi flu maps. Whoever does these, I love you guys, we use these all the time, trying to figure out where we're at compared to the rest of the country. So we had widespread influenza at that time before most of the country was really getting going. So here's our case. January 26th, there was an 8-year-old that was a previously healthy male, was admitted to the St. Paul Children's Hospital, PICU, for respiratory distress. On the 27th, MRSA grew from the tracheal aspirate, and I think those of you in this business know those two organisms are a bad pair, and we're going to see more and more of this combination causing problems in the future. On the 28th, the child was deteriorating and transferred to our ECMO unit across the river in Minneapolis Intensive Care Unit. And unfortunately, on January 31st, this child died. Infection control, interestingly, in our own hospital is where the child died. We received information from public health, who had been notified from the school nurse. So it went out of the organization to the school system and then back to us. So we worked a little bit on internal communication after that. And so here was the sweet little child whose parents wanted to share his story. So there it was, Wednesday night, January 31st. I am watching the evening news, and this beautiful face comes up and airs the fact that Lucio died of influenza A, and his parents wanted all parents to know that children should receive flu vaccines. And I thought it was one of those moments where you go, oh, tomorrow's going to be interesting. At 10:30 then, I got on the phone and started calling our two children's hospitals, one in St. Paul and one in Minneapolis, just to see what our flu vaccine supply was at that point in time, and didn't sleep much that night thinking about that we were going to have to do something. So Thursday, February 1st, I did a quick runaround to our two pediatric clinics to sort of say, what's the response? And they said, the phones are ringing off the hook. We can't answer them all. People are really anxious. And I asked the medical directors, do you think your usual mode of operating is going to be able to handle it? And they said, absolutely not. So we're going to need to do something extraordinary. And then, of course, the first person I call is my colleague, Chris Ayersman, at the Minnesota Department of Health. I remember being on I-94 driving between the Children's Hospital from Minneapolis, St. Paul, hatching this plan to do a mass immunization clinic. And Chris, of course, said, yep, absolutely, let's go. And so by 1 o'clock, we had arranged a conference call with our two agencies and had developed a plan by 1:30, identified work groups, figured out where the vaccine and the supplies and the staffing were going to come from, got some media ideas, and in just very short order, we essentially had less than 48 hours to this first clinic. And I think a lot of that is a tribute to the existing relationship that that Children's and the Minnesota Department of Health already have, Chris and I already have. So when a disaster like this happens, you call up the people you know and trust. And so it says a lot to know your public-private partners in your community. So Friday, February 2nd, the newspapers were carrying front page stories of our clinic efforts and the phone calls to Children's St. Paul, where we were going to be holding this flu vaccine clinic, to register their patients for the flu shot really went through the roof. On a usual day before all of this, they maybe got 189 calls to their appointment line, and this day there were well over 400 calls and quite busy and difficult to handle. At this point in time, we decided to use the Hospital Incident Command System, or HIC. Some of you are probably very familiar with this. It's an emergency management process and procedure that you think of with big, terrible things like Katrina and those kinds of things. And I think one of the things we learned is that you might not need a terrible disaster to use a good system like this. So, and we use the hospitals in Minneapolis to St. Paul area mission mode, which is all a connection of all the hospitals, to put out a call to say, we need help, we need nurses, medical assistants, et cetera, to help us staff this. And so that was an already established connection that we tapped into. So Chris is going to talk a little bit about the public health aspects.
Our department and the city of St. Paul, because the Department of Health is kind of the overseer of a lot of what goes on, but it's actually the local public health agencies that make things happen. And so the clinics that we were doing with the Children's Hospital were happening in St. Paul, and that's in St. Paul, Ramsey County. So we were working with that group to really make the clinics happen, and we've had training on incident management and that type of thing. And so our funding has been used to create systems, obviously, as Patsy said, that in your mind you think you're going to use for the next Katrina, but in reality we found have been extremely useful for the, I hate to say everyday event, but for the more the day-to-day event. And I think that's actually shows them to be a good use, because I think if we can show our funders that this isn't just for the big bad thing, but they get the bang for their buck every single time something happens, we use these systems, it's great. And so we have a health alert network that we use to get the word out about this. We have 24/7 contact information, and so you know, we could use that in letting people know about the situation. Certainly there's hotline technology and clinic supplies, and all those things came together to support the efforts of vaccinating kids on this Saturday in February. Yes, and there's that photo.
There's that photo after the sleepless night. So Chris representing the Minnesota Department of Health, the state health agency, Robert Einwick on the right representing the local county public health, and then Children's sponsoring it with me in the middle there. So just to talk a little bit more about HICS, so I ended up being the incident commander, since I, you know, when you get a good idea, you get to have all the pain with it too. So, Chris was the logistics chief, because she was very, very connected, as she said, to the supply and the vaccines and those kinds of things. And our Ramsey County Public Health Officer was very skilled in emergency preparedness, and he was our planning chief. We developed a joint communications and press release and worked through the Children's Hospital Communications Office. And Chris, being a registered nurse, and myself as well, we're pretty proud to say that this was a totally nurse-managed and run clinic, and the providers on site were myself and another nurse practitioner who evaluated kids who were questionable whether they were healthy enough to be immunized, and multiple RNs and MAs pulled this off under state protocol. So we did this in two Saturdays, because after the first clinic, two more children died and the panic went up even more. So the first day we did use a pre-registration, a computerized system, and had 540 people check in, and these three people came back the next week to help again. Speaking of getting exhausted, it is very tiring but important. And we had greeters and guides, and one of the HICS principles is that you use color coding vests and you can identify really quickly who has what kind of role. And so they would guide people to go through to the clinic, and as you can see, the people coming around behind them, the clinic is just in a big circle. So they're heading back to the parking ramp, and it was just one continual flow, and no one ever sat down. There was not waiting. And we had vaccine drying stations that people worked on for the day. And then Chris was working on the logistics, so I'll let her talk about that.
The first clinic that was held, actually, we decided that you know, they would do billing, they would bill insurance, they'd, you know, check for VFC eligibility, and that was fine for that first clinic. But once we'd had the second two deaths, or the second and third death, the interest was heightened, and we discovered, as Rebecca found, that there are certain aspects of your clinic flow that are the most time-consuming, and clearly checking in and registering folks to do the billing was part of that. And so we had donated vaccine, and that enabled us to be able to not deal with billing in the second clinic, and that was really significant in terms of streamlining things. And that vaccine was donated by Maxim. So I'll just mention that because that was really helpful to us.
Mm-hmm. And then that policy of two vaccines in the same season, if you're under 9 and it's your first influenza vaccine, it was important to kind of figure out a plan for that. How do you get them that second dose in the same season, and making sure that we kept some vaccine supply available. So our vice president of medical affairs came, and he's like, wow, it looks like Disney in here. And I said, well, what do you mean? And he goes, well, you know, Disney, lots of people, lots of lines, but everyone's moving and everyone's happy. And I said, okay, then we'll deal with that analogy. But if what I wanted you to see is by the window there, all those empty chairs. There was nobody sitting down or waiting. Everyone, as I said, kept flowing and moving through. So Saturday, February 3rd, all the persons vaccinated completed a registration information. There were 430 children and 110 adults vaccinated. The clinic ran for 4.5 hours, and we had 12 vaccination rooms going at a time, and a nurse practitioner to examine 10 ill children that were febrile and couldn't they get a vaccine. And we had 3 fainters. 2 of them were sisters watching each other get vaccinated. And they were the last 2 of the day. So we were almost out of the woods, and then these 2 girls fainted. But everyone did okay. And then television crews were around, and it was quite a hectic day. As you can see, the age distribution, this was from that first clinic where we registered. We were able to pull out a little bit more information about who these kids were. Most of them were in the 1 to 5 year old age group, 34% in the 6 to 10 year old. But I think the main thing when you look at this is these were mostly kids who were already in the recommended age group, and they should have well been vaccinated by this point in time, which makes us think more about that universal pediatric influenza recommendation. So we did, the first Saturday, we did adults in a separate area because there were some staff who had not vaccinated children and some who had not vaccinated adults, and they kind of wanted to keep with their nursing skills. And that actually slows things down quite a bit. So our recommendation is keep those families together and just make sure you have skilled people who can do both age groups. We also learned the first Saturday about who they are in terms of payers. 90% of them had a medical home and had private insurance. And so afterwards we were like, well, where were their clinics? Why are we doing this? And I think it was that the old mentality that we're all trying to put to rest, that we did it. We're done. We did our flu clinics in the fall, and we're done doing that. We're not going to order more vaccine. We're not going to start it all up again. And so you go ahead, children's and the health department. And so unfortunately, these folks should have been able to go back to their medical home, but that wasn't happening. And a very small percentage was kids who were on VFC. And as far as where these patients were, only 17% of them were already registered children's hospitals and clinics patients, our own patients. So this really was sort of a community service that we opened our doors, and we're happy to do it.
Can I just comment,
Patsy? Yes, please do.
We learned from this year. We've had 2 pediatric deaths in Minnesota this year, and recognizing and looking at that data in which children's really served as a safety net in ways that both local public health and our private providers should have been prepared to do. When we had our first death, we asked our local public health agencies to check with providers because we really wanted to refer patients back to their medical home. Not that this wasn't highly effective, but we really did want to encourage that message for providers that, you know, flu vaccination doesn't end in November just because you're tired of it. You know, you need to be willing to do that into the full season.
So another week went by, and another 2 children died, an 18-year-old and a 17-month-old. We pulled together another quick conference call, and the MDH asked us if we would do a repeat performance, and we said for sure. And then we did modify, we learned from our first Saturday, modified it, and dropped, as we said, some things that were cumbersome, like the registration. We used the county emergency hotlines for pre-appointed times, and I think I would do that again, because it really lets you sort of spread out the volumes instead of everybody coming right as the clinic opens. You know what you're up against. And we established work groups again and got ready on Friday. In that first half hour of the hotline, there were 268 calls, as many as in 8 hours the previous Friday. So we knew that we were going to be overwhelmed. People that called were very fearful. They had lots of questions. We thought, boy, we might be in over our heads. We had another conference call and said, do we need to change the venue and bring it to the XL Energy Center or some other larger place? And instead, we decided to keep it there because we did it once and we did it well, and expand the hours and add vaccinators, and it worked really well, instead of having to re-communicate where the new clinic was, et cetera. So that was a brisk decision that we made that worked out well. And we closed the phones at noon with over 1,000 pre-registered throughout the day, and then again used mission mode. And interestingly, only one nurse from all the Twin Cities hospitals was available. And our lesson on that is, when these things happen, you're on your own. Because everybody was dealing with influenza, everybody was busy, everybody was short-staffed, providers were sick, et cetera. So you really do need to plan to be on your own. So Saturday, we did not register people. We just had a brief flu vaccine contraindication questions. We had 1,000 pre-appointments and 561 walk-ins. We ran for 6 hours. We had 21 rooms going with vaccinators. We had two nurse practitioners at this time that were examining children. And we noted that patients, because that was the only other question we asked, was where are they coming from? They were from 21 counties in Minnesota and a few from Wisconsin. So, do you want to talk about this?
We did do a time study because our mass dispensing emergency preparedness folks were definitely interested in looking at this. And I guess, Rebecca, they thought it would be easier than developing their own. They thought they might as well take advantage as long as we were doing this. So what they found was that we had a total of 245 patients in an hour. The average time from patient sign in to release was 12 minutes, so I guess we're on track with South Carolina. Average time through registration, 3 minutes, and average time from registration to release from the clinic, 9 minutes. So we felt very pleased at the speed at which we were able to get people through, particularly because it was a pediatric clinic, and that can be challenging with snowsuits and little kids. But I have to say, those vaccinators were something else again. They're very good with kids.
So the media, of course, picked this up, and we're, you know, a lot of times the media gets beat up, and the media in this case were our friend. They really advertised it. They gave detailed information. They kept checking in with us to see if there was anything different, anything they wanted us to emphasize. It was on all the television channels and all the front stories. So they actually were very helpful. And this at the same time that the emergency rooms were full and the hospital is going on as usual, and we're trying to vaccinate all of our healthcare workers. So it was just a really, really busy time. And you can see the increase in patients over those days of how many kids were being seen. It really almost doubled their usual amount, and those with ILI. But in the end, we had happy customers. So what did we learn? Do you want to talk to us a bit about this, Chris?
Sure. The HIKE system is helpful, as I mentioned, not just for emergency situations, but it can be useful in urgent situations. And I think the more we practice it, the more familiar we become, and the better we'll be at the true emergency. It worked really well for multi-agency coordination because, as Patsy said, we had Children's Hospital, we had the Department of Health, and we had Ramsey County. So we had three different agencies plus volunteers from other places coming together, and that really helped to provide coordination. The other thing that it did was it helped us, as it was sort of a reminder, to look at credentialing of staff. We needed nurses. Nurses volunteered. But the HIKE system reminded us that we really ought to check that those nurses were licensed and document that. And then it also helped with a clear chain of communication because, again, numbers of people from lots of agencies. So in the end, it was very useful. And as I said, I think it's really useful if you can tell your funders and the folks that are working with emergency preparedness that, you know what, this is not just going to serve us in a big crisis. This will serve us on a day-to-day basis.
And then we learned some practical things as we close here. Just, you know, having that attitude of, well, yes, we can do this, and then you lay awake all night thinking, what have I done, you know? But it's St. Paul Winter Carnival time, which is a huge event in St. Paul. It was the same exit as our exit to the Children's Hospital on the interstate, and, you know, at 2 in the morning, I just had this fear that no one's going to be able to get to the emergency room or anything, and I called the police and said, we need a traffic person, and he said, okay, it's okay. He kind of talked me down. You're going to do fine. So, but you just have that can-do attitude. And, you know, just go for making sure that you meet a need. And I felt like this family was so brave to talk about their child and their situation, that they were reaching the baton out to us and that we really needed to take it. I mentioned how important our close relationship is, not only on this, but just everything. I mean, we just value our Minnesota Department of Health so much and work together on so many different things. And then, again, the community clinics really need to step up when it's time to take care of our own. If we're going to really promote medical home, then the medical home needs to always be there. And then that plan for dose two in the same season, having scripts for people who answer the phone, having, as was mentioned earlier, security and environmental services and a person who can just do the running and the relieving and some of those basic things you might not think about as you're planning it, but in the middle of it, you realize you really need, all you need is a glass of water. Walkie-talkies to communicate, little things like the little small needles, sharps containers on the wall of the clinics filled up in about 2 seconds, and so getting the large ones. Volunteers of all ages, many of us have high school students who are trying to get their community service hours, and they were really, really helpful. So don't turn away volunteers. You can put those kids to really good use, and it was excellent for them. And then we did a walkthrough the day before our first clinic, and I don't know if you can see, like right above this woman's nose there's a little flag that sticks out. They're color-coded flags, and we were like, how are we gonna know when they're ready for the next patient? And we figured it out as we did our walkthrough to say, we'll put out a green flag when they're good to go for a new patient. We'll put a black flag out when they're in there and the room is occupied. And then all the flags out meant, I really have to go to the bathroom. And as we said, there were some things that we learned to improve, eliminating when you can, registration, computerization, keeping families together, doing the phone pre-reg, I think was really, really valuable. Volunteers were just so helpful. Increasing that number of vaccinators and improve the flow and decreases the time. Just because you have a big number of people coming doesn't mean you need a big space. You just need to spread them out over time, and so that helped us a lot. These folks, who this is what they do for a living, is give shots all day. They were like 2 to 1. They could get people in and out of their room, these little ones, faster than people who weren't used to immunizing little ones. So for the future, we would consider web-based appointments, electronic on-site registration, adding hours and shifts, requesting, as Chris is emphasizing, the vaccine, having that procured earlier, and again, urging everyone to kind of step up to the plate. So again, thank you to the many partners who participated in this. Thanks.